greetings and salutations. Welcome to the program. I'm Peter Sampson. This is Bleav in Blazers on the Bleav Podcast Network. Great to be with you on a beautiful, beautiful Portland day. Man, it's going to be nice this week. It's going to be hot. Weather's all over the place at the moment. It's cold and rainy on Father's Day. Went out to the Portland Pickles game. You know, Pickles, Lintz Stadium, or Lintz Park, Walker Stadium. You know, what's something better to do on Father's Day? Go watch some baseball, some collegiate wood bat baseball. And so, you know, we grab the kid, and Kim and I go out there. And wouldn't you know it, you know, the weather, it's kind of cloudy all day. And we're watching the forecast, and it says, well, look, you know, you might get some rain. Okay, that's fine. I can deal with some rain. Well, you might get some thunder showers. Well, okay, we can deal with some thunder showers. It's Oregon. It's Portland. No big deal. And we get there, and it was all fun and games. Looked like the weather was going to participate. And the instant we sat in our seats, we grabbed the beer. We grabbed the hot dog. We grabbed the kid some Cracker Jacks. We sit down. Drop, drop. Oh, man, I feel some drops. And then the skies opened up and just unleashed on us. So got to try to find cover. And if you've been to Walker Stadium, been to a Pickles game, there's not a lot of covered area. We're just kind of on some stairs under some trees getting reprieve. Let, you know, 10, 15 minutes go by. Okay, we're good. We go back, wipe our seats down. They're soaked. I don't really mind. But then it starts hailing on us. And I don't mean just a tiny bit of super small particles. No, don't get me wrong. This wasn't like Texas grapefruit sized hail, you know, the kind that's going to smash out your car windows and make your car alarm go off. But it was substantial, man. It was the real deal. After that, everything calmed down. It was a great day out at Walker Stadium, by the way. First time I'd been to a Pickles game in, well, I couldn't even tell you when. I think it was their second season. I had season tickets on the first base side. It was great. My kid was really young. And I loved it because, I mean, A, you know, hey, season tickets, baseball, it was fun. But he was young enough and the tickets were like affordable enough that if he couldn't handle it, because I'm talking, he was like 3 years old at the time. If he couldn't handle it, it was no big deal. You just leave at the end of the third inning, right? It cost me $8. No problem. Man, we bought these seats, though. They were $30 a piece for basically the same section. I understand inflation and all that, but give me a break. But it was a great day at Walker Stadium. It was a lot of fun. If you're a father, I hope you had a great Father's Day, whatever that meant to you, whether it was, you know, hanging out with the family, being active, going out and about, or it was just, you know, quiet day at home. Whatever you dig. Hope you got it. The NBA season is over. Thank God, right? I don't know about you, man. This is my first year in like 6 years on the Blazers beat, actually going to every game, covering the team, in an in-person capacity. And, it wore on me. It was a long year. And, obviously the Blazers have been done for a while now, but the NBA season marched on. It is done. The Boston Celtics are your NBA champions. Not a huge surprise, especially once Denver got knocked out. Boston strong all year long. Front to back, man. Very, very well-built team. Of course, it helps when you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown as your 1 and 2, or you can call them 1A, 1B, whatever you want to call it. Kristaps Porzingis was a great, great pickup for them. I know, you know, the moves and moving off of Marcus Smart, I know a lot of Celtics fans hated that. Well, look what it got you. You know, you love that guy. You love his heart. You love the way he repped the Celtics green every game, but now you have a championship. And then, of course, you have Derek White and Drew Holiday, a couple all-NBA defensive second-team players. Really well-built squad. You've got role players that can come in and just stick the three or just give you a couple, you know, a handful of decent minutes. They're not going to blow any leads. They're not going to embarrass you defensively. Really well-built team. Props to Brad Stevens for building that team. And they are your champions. Now, they do have some questions that they need to answer now. Derek White wants to get paid this offseason, and he's going to get paid. Can Boston make it happen? I don't know. I honestly don't know if they're going to be able to pay Derek White exactly what he thinks he deserves and what he actually deserves. So it's going to be interesting to see if this team can keep that group together to some degree. It's also been interesting to see kind of the reframing of the Drew Holiday deal. Blazers legend, Drew Holiday. Obviously, you know, Portland gets Drew from Milwaukee. It's part of the Damian Lillard deal. They have him for, was it a matter of days? You know, Drew does it how you're supposed to do it and gives Joe Cronin a list of teams, a handful of teams he'd be willing to go to. Boston is one of them. And among that list, they reach out, they find the best deal, and they make it happen. And it was Boston. Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams III, a pick, and I think there was a pick swap. Oh, the Warriors pick, and then a future Boston pick as well. It was considered to be a good deal. I think it was a good deal. Obviously, Robert Williams III, Time Lord, he's got the knee issues. You know, he's injury prone. Malcolm Brogdon had his own injury concerns that stopped him from being routed. I think it was to Memphis. It was the original Marcus Smart sort of deal, the Kristaps Porzingis deal. But Joe Cronin did pretty well here. And everyone at the time thought so. Right? Like, oh, okay, you know, Portland, you know, they got these picks from Milwaukee and they got DeAndre Ayton as part of this deal as well. Because you got to remember, it was all one big trade, Damian Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic in a three-team deal. So they get these extra assets and everyone goes, well, you know, Portland did pretty well here. It's a rebuild. You're looking for picks mostly. You got a couple Milwaukee picks where especially they're in the future, they might be bad and you might end up with some really valuable picks. You get that Warriors pick this year, which is the 14th pick. Golden State did not make the playoffs. You've got these future picks as well, all the way out to 2029 that may or may not be worth something. As far as a high value first round pick, who knows? But Joe Cronin did well. Well, now seeing Drew Holiday and the Boston Celtics just steamroll the Eastern Conference all regular season through the playoffs, you know, if you include the playoffs and everything, they won 80 games. And now it's like people are trying to kind of reframe that. Oh, Portland got fleeced. I've seen that a few times. Did they? Did they really with a dude that was never going to play for them? I don't think that they did. I understand, like, maybe you could have held out and maybe gotten a tiny bit more for him. What were you to take him into the season and have him sit out and have to deal with questions on that every single day? Hey, is Drew going to play? Why isn't Drew playing? Drew, do you not want to be here? The team doesn't want that. Drew Holiday doesn't want that. No one wants that. So instead, you know, they flip into Boston and it makes sense, right? Because look, we knew before last offseason or before the Dame trade, we'll say. So at this time last season, you knew, look, coming out of the East, it's going to be Milwaukee and Boston are the two teams that you really don't want to mess with. And I know Miami could in theory be there too. You know, we thought that Dame wants out. And when it became clear it was not going to be Miami, it ended up being Milwaukee. And you go, well, wow, it's going to be the Bucks, clearly, right? And then you turn around, you go to Boston, you go, look, Milwaukee just got Dame. You know what you need? A Dame stopper. So you send them Drew Holiday. It makes perfect sense to me. So I don't know why I say we, but, you know, you're not doing it. I'm not doing it, but just the media is doing it. Why we're sort of recategorizing or reframing this Drew Holiday deal. It's fine. It was a fine deal in the overarching context of moving off of Damian Lillard and Yusuf Nurkic. You got some nice, nice pieces. I mean, and you know what? I guess I do know why, quote unquote, we're reframing it. It's because there's nothing to talk about and people need to talk about it. I don't have something to talk about. I just don't do a pod. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna just pump out garbage to pump out garbage, right? Like everyone does that. I'm not gonna do that. It's too much of a challenge. And I think that's ultimately what all of this is. Oh, I gotta do a show today. What can we talk about? Well, Drew Holiday. Yeah, Drew's doing really well. How can we, you know, make that into some drama that might go viral and get clicks? That's all it is. It's just clicks. Jeff Van Gundy was a senior consultant for the Boston Celtics this season. There's a lot of that going on, isn't there? A lot of consulting gigs with I'm not officially a coach, but I'm a consultant. We're seeing that more and more. Van Gundy also obviously a broadcaster. He has agreed on a deal. He's going to be Ty Lue's lead assistant with the Clippers. So Jeff Van Gundy, after a long break, back in the game. That's good. I like Van Gundy. I don't mind Van Gundy as a commentator. I guess what I really like about him is he'll call out BS when he sees it, both with the game, with the officials, with the fans, just with everybody. But it also, it kind of felt like a shtick, you know, like he'd really lean into that a little too much. Like, what's your shtick? I'm the short, bald curmudgeon. Yeah, okay, cool. That works for a while until you're forcing it. Sometimes it felt forced, but good for him. I like Van Gundy. And, you know, it's interesting how Ty Lue, I mean, I fully admit when I'm wrong, and I'm wrong a lot. Everyone is. It's just whether they admit it or not when we're talking hoops. Man, Ty Lue, when he first got into the coaching game, you know, with Cleveland, I'm just like, really, Ty Lue, that's your guy? Like, that's who LeBron's going to roll with? Yeah. No, it turns out he's a great, great coach. And I did not see that coming. I truly didn't. And now having Van Gundy as a lead assistant, I mean, Jeff Van Gundy, great X's and O's guy. Ty Lue, you know, I do think his strength is in managing, you know, egos, great players. That's why it worked in Cleveland with LeBron. It's why, to a degree, obviously, they wish they had advanced further. But it's why it, quote unquote, worked in L.A. with Kawhi and Paul George and James Harden, you know, Westbrook, all these dudes, you know. They got egos. They're big name players. They're big salary players. How do you get them to play together, to stay bought in? It's difficult. And, you know, generally coaches kind of excel at one or the other. Are you a relationships guy? Are you an X's and O's guy? And, you know, I can tell you, back in a previous life in the business world, I'm a relationships guy. Just kind of a big picture, just like, hey, let's be cool, grease the wheels, keep it moving, and let other people handle the nitty gritty. Stay out of their way. Let them know if they need to change course. Otherwise, let people that are good at what they do what they're good at, right? And I think that's what Ty Lue does with his team. And adding Van Gundy, I really don't think can hurt anything. And then, you know, it gets him back in the game, the modern NBA. Obviously, yes, consulting for the Boston Celtics last season, but it gets him kind of back in. So if he's interested in maybe pursuing another head coaching job, and of course he is because this league just recycles head coaches, he'll get a year of recent experience under his belt before he maybe comes up for those further opportunities. So that'll be something to watch. By the way, Clippers, I don't know. I'm not sure if they're gonna keep that group together. They're locked in with Kawhi. They extended Kawhi, gave him that 5-year super max on top of his already max deal. Of course, he continues to deal with the knee issues, but they lock him up mid-season, and you hear, yeah, Paul George is next. It's right around the corner, right around the corner, right around the corner, and it doesn't happen, and doesn't happen, and doesn't happen. I mean, the whispers have been out there, Paul George and the 76ers, for months now. And I don't know if you saw game 4, the NBA Finals. You know, Paul George has been there in the broadcast booth and or the broadcast table, whatever you want to counter. They added Joel Embiid as well. And it was clear Joel Embiid was kind of recruiting Paul George. Those whispers have been there. And you hear that maybe the Clippers and George's camp, his agent, maybe they're not seeing quite eye to eye. Maybe the Clippers don't want to max him. Or maybe they say, hey, we already kind of maxed Kawhi Leonard here. And we traded for Harden. We have to pay Harden. You don't trade for that guy and make him feel wanted and then lowball him. And it's not that Harden is necessarily going to get a max anymore at this point, but he's going to get more than maybe another 30-whatever-year-old shooting guard of his current caliber would, because you made the deal for him in the name. And Paul George just sort of might be on the outside looking in, which is kind of crazy to me. I know Paul George been injury prone as well. He's had the shoulder issues and elbow issue for a couple years now. But for the most part, he's out there. You know what I'm saying? He's out there. He's playing defense. He's still an elite two-way player. And I think he'd be perfect for Philly. You know, you have Embiid, you have Maxey, and you don't have a whole lot else. What they need is one more two-way player, just a third guy that can sort of bridge the gap between Embiid and between Maxey. And I love Paul George potentially as that guy. You heard it here. Do not be surprised to see that happen this offseason. And then Ty Lue, I mean, I certainly don't think it'll be addition by subtraction. I just don't. You know, you can't count on Kawhi to play. I mean, but maybe maybe not having George there. Harden will get his shots. He'll be able to fit in. Remember, there were the challenges a little bit having Harden fit in with that group before they sort of figured things out after, what was it, about a dozen games. And then all of a sudden they kind of worked things out and started rolling. Maybe it'll help in that regard. I'm not exactly sure. Going to be an interesting offseason. speaking of free agency or players moving teams, Mario Hezonja, Blazers legend in the news. Been out of the NBA the last two seasons, played with Real Madrid. And he, according to Mark Stein, is coming up as a free agent to watch this offseason. He's 29 now. His last season was with the Blazers in that 2019-2020 season. Mario Hezonja, very interesting case. Look, you recall 2015, he was taken fifth overall, and everyone keeps kind of hoping he's going to tap into what everyone saw at that time. And this isn't a new take. I've said this multiple times, whether it's on the radio airwaves, whether it's on podcasts, whatever it is, I've said this, but Mario Hezonja is wild to me because when you evaluate a player, you watch a guy and you go, okay, let's look at his shooting form. Let's look at his lateral movement. Let's look at his wingspan. Let's look at how his hustle, how he boxes out, his court vision, all these different things, right? And you kind of use that to create a model of a player in your mind. How is he going to translate to this level? Mario Hezonja is wild to me because he checks every single box nearly that you want a player to check, and yet he sucks at NBA basketball. I've never seen it before. Good shooting form, good court vision. He's a hustler. He's got a nice wingspan. He's aggressive on defense, and he's terrible. I've never seen that in all my years of watching NBA basketball. It is wild. But he keeps getting chances because you look at that, it'll trick you, right? You're like, man, we need something. Our team just needs something, but we got the cap. We got a cheap owner. You know, we only have, you know, $7 million in cap space that we can spend. We have the mid-level, that's it, or the taxpayer mid-level. We're screwed. Well, Hezonja, man, if he could just put it together, we've seen it before. He's 6'8". Oh, he's so good. Let's do it. It's going to happen. He's going to sign with someone this season. And I'll tell you what, it's not going to work. And he's going to sign with someone else next season. His NBA future not done yet. And if you remember his epic Blazers year, he averaged 4.8 points, 3.5 rebounds, and shot 30.8% on the three ball. And of course, you know, he was touted as, you know, by Neil Olshey as a, you know, a high value, high upside, cheap. And I bought it. We all bought it. It's like, hell yeah, dude, that guy was the fifth overall pick just a couple years ago. That's great. Get him to tap in. Damian Lillard will unlock him. Nope. Not going to happen. Mario Hezonja, bad NBA player. And yes, I know. I'm not going to say bad player. I say bad NBA player because the worst guy in the NBA can, like, school you, right? Like, we all know that none of these guys are bad objectively, but when it comes to competing at the NBA level, Mario Hezonja is a bad NBA player. But EuroLeague this last season, EuroLeague is a good league. 13.5 points, 4.5 rebounds, a steal, an assist, shot 43% from three, and that's gonna trick some GM. I'm telling you, someone's gonna go, oh man, what if he could do that for us? What if we could get 10 points and three boards out of him with some defense? He's 6'8", baby. Let's go. It's not going to happen. Do not be fooled. General manager, I'm trying to save you from yourself. Listen to me. Okay, NBA draft coming up just over a week away, 9 days away by my count. Of course, it's a two-day event now. The draft, always around my birthday. My birthday is June 27th. This year, it is the 26th and the 27th, which is even more unnecessary than another team signing Mario Hezonja. What's more unnecessary than that? Extending the NBA draft into two full days. It's absurd. But here we are. Portland Trail Blazers picking 7, picking 14, picking 34, picking 40. And what do they need, right? Well, a little bit of everything, except we sort of understand that they don't need guards. Okay, You've got Scoot, you've got Shea. Now, have either of those guys been unlocked? No, not really. But you've got enough faith, you've got enough confidence, you've seen to a degree enough that you go, okay, these are the dudes that we're rolling with. And even if not, you've still got Anfernee Simons for now. You've still, in theory, for now, got Malcolm Brogdon, even though I expect him to be moved in a matter of weeks. And you go, okay, well, we certainly don't need anyone else in the backcourt. And to a degree, you know, the Blazers, who need so much talent, you probably shouldn't necessarily draft for need, I don't think. You should probably kind of take the best player available. But if you are looking at need, you shouldn't take a guard. You know, Nikola Topic, even ACL injury notwithstanding, probably shouldn't draft him. You probably shouldn't. You've got guards. But there are a few players that the Blazers have been linked to. And I'll be honest, I don't trust any of it. Friend of the program, Sean Hyken, has pointed out, and I've seen this as well, you can go through, like, yesterday, three new mock drafts came out, and they had the Blazers. There were six players that the Blazers were taking in the first round, as in one had these two, another one had these two, and another one had these two, and none of them overlapped, which is a long way to say, if anyone tells you that they know what is happening with the Blazers, they are lying to you. Please understand that. No one knows. Now, we can guess, we can infer, but no one actually knows. Looking at some of the guys that have been connected to Portland, that, I mean, Dalton Knecht, obviously been here for a workout, great shooter. And I don't love the idea of Dalton Knecht for the Blazers. I wonder what his ceiling is. But on the flip side, like, the Blazers need shooting desperately. And he is the one guy more than anyone else that can walk in from day one and bang jumpers, right? And there's value in that. And you go, okay, maybe this guy isn't going to be a star. Maybe he's not going to be a good defender. By maybe, I mean definitely. But he can come in and hit jump shots. Isn't that worth something right now? Probably. Maras Buzelis from the G League Ignite has maybe the highest upside, but he's probably 2 years away from being 2 years away. But, you know, Portland's been linked to him as well. Personally, and I'll go deeper later this week on this, but I like Cody Williams at Colorado. And that's probably who I think Portland should take. It might even be who I think they're going to take. I know there's been so much noise around Donovan Clingan, right? UConn, big center. I don't know how much of that is smoke. I mean, there's a ton of smoke right now around that. The Blazers, along with the Grizzlies, are looking to trade up to ensure that they could grab him. Now you have the Hawks. Landry Fields on Monday came out and made sure to point out that, oh, the plan right now is to take the pick, and we might take Clingan. Well, first of all, that's nonsense. Because if they're going to take a big man, they're going to take Sarr. And we know that. They're saying that to try to maybe get a godfather offer from the Blazers or the Memphis Grizzlies, or in theory, anyone else that might want to take Clingan. I don't think that that is going to happen, but I don't know that it's necessarily likely that he's going to fall to seven. I think in a perfect world, you could see that happen. You could see like Atlanta maybe either take Sarr or Risa Shea, and then Washington takes the other one of those. And then you have Houston, who doesn't need a center because their best player is a center in Sin June. And so maybe they take like a Reed Shepherd or something like that. Number four, you know, you have the Spurs and the Pistons at 4 and 5. They don't need a center, obviously, with Wemby and then Jalen Duren, who's so good and also affordable, by the way. I don't think they necessarily want to take away from that. Now, that doesn't mean they won't look to maybe add a center, but it's not going to be a high profile guy that's going to need and expect minutes and is going to get that rookie salary slot as, say, the fifth overall pick, right? You're going to look for something a little more low cost there. After that, you have Charlotte, and who knows what Charlotte would do. They have Brandon Miller. They have Mello Ball. And, you know, what do you want to pair him with? Now, you know, they have Mark Williams. Is that the center of the future? Do you want to maybe look at another guard to pair with Mello, you know, and have Miller on the wing? That's sort of the wild card to me. And then picking next is Portland. And so I don't I don't know that any of those teams are going to really want to take Klingon. I could see Charlotte doing it. I could maybe see, you know, the Detroit Pistons doing it, even though with Duren, I just don't think you want to rip minutes away from Jalen Duren. So I don't know that Portland's necessarily going to have to trade up to take him. And then if they don't, is that even the guy that they necessarily want to draft? A lot of smoke around there. But where I stand, and like I said, I'll dive deeper into this in our next step later this week. But I just say you don't overthink it. You take Cody Williams, high upside, position of need. Let him grow along with Scoot and Shea. Let DeAndre Ayton be your center for now. You know, do another year of allowing, you know, Dwapreath to play those backup minutes, even though you're not expecting maybe a ton of growth from him. And then sort of play things by ear. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, DeAndre Ayton's a max player. So if you're looking to move off of him, do you think someone's going to, you know, pay him the max? Or, you know, should you even trade him? I mean, the way he played the second half of last year, shouldn't you maybe just see if that's what you got out of this guy now? I think so, but remains to be seen. 9 days away, NBA draft. It's going to be interesting. Blazers, 4 picks. I do not expect them to make all 4 picks. They do not have room on the roster, whether that means, you know, trading a couple second rounders to move up, or trading a pair of firsts to move up, or draft and stash, whatever that may be, remains to be seen. But I don't expect them to take all 4 picks and, you know, hold on to the players that are drafted. All right. With that, we'll be back in just a couple days. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Peter Sampson, S-A-M-P-S-O-N. I guess I should call it X. It's called X, but it'll be Twitter till I die. Peter Sampson, S-A-M-P-S-O-N. This has been Bleav in Blazers on the Bleav Podcast Network.